listening to Harrismith Radio, episode 15. Hey there, I'm your host, Wayne McPhail. In this episode, we combine two natural, literally natural, partners, blooms and bees. First up, I chat with Terry Cadeau, the Executive Director of Canada Blooms, a venerable garden show that will soon be celebrating 25 years of gardening glory. Next up, we decode honey jars. Well, that sounds simple, right? Well, wrong. You'll see. By the way, if you want to read Harrismith Magazine instead of listen to it, you can subscribe to the print version online at harrismithmagazine.com. And you can find Harrismith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. But for now, settle in for the next half hour of Harrismith Radio. For almost a quarter century, the Canada Blooms Show in Toronto has brought gardens, gardening wisdom, and gardening supplies and suppliers under one roof for a giant horticultural celebration. The next one, the 24th, is just a few weeks away as I record this. I talked with the show's executive director, Terry Cadeau, about the changing demographics the show attracts and why it is a literal perennial favorite. Here's our conversation. Hey, Terry, thanks very much for joining me. I wanted to talk about Canada Blooms over the decades because you're coming up to your 25th anniversary next year. Congratulations on that. So I want to go back to the beginnings of Canada Blooms and let's talk through the history, through the lens of sort of shifting demographics, shifting brand, shifting ideas of what folks want and what you're delivering to them out of Canada Blooms. So how did Canada Blooms first start?
Well, first off, Wayne, thanks for having me on, and people of Harrismith. Big fan of the magazine, and we've been partners with Harrismith for 5 years now at Canada Blooms. Getting back to your question, Canada Blooms was originally founded by two key drivers, Tony DiGiovanni, who is the Executive Director of Landscape Ontario, and Kathy Dabrowski, who was one of the drivers of the Garden Club of Toronto. And the two organizations wanted to create a garden festival as a gift to the city of Toronto. And different organizations had never met before. They first started having conversations, and all their volunteers got together and created this wonderful garden event festival that's evolved over our 24 years and created this great horticulture celebration as a gift to the city and to the residents.
Talk a little bit about those two organizations. Who made them up? What were the cultural mavens and mandarins of the city, and who came to the events back then?
Well, the Garden Club of Toronto is a women's organization that really creates flower shows and fundraising for different community events. This is their 74th year of existence, and wow, over the years they've done all the gardens at Casa Loma, they've done teaching gardens and fundraising for the Toronto Botanical Gardens, and they've been working to create green spaces throughout the city of Toronto and the region, and some of the funds from Canada Blooms is a nonprofit. We help fund some of those green initiatives that they create. And they've have between 200 and 500 members over the years, and they were really instrumental in getting Hillary Weston and the Loblaws Corporation and Royal Bank of Canada involved in the first few years of Canada Blooms. And they're again a garden or a flower design based organization and a social organization. Landscape Ontario, on the other hand, is a horticultural trades association. They represent the industry, which is garden designers, garden builders, garden growers, garden lighting, garden irrigation, and they really are a trade association. And they wanted to promote what they do as well and make sure the public's aware of all their members and the training their members receive and that they're licensed and why you want to hire someone who's a Landscape Ontario member and share their excitement for the green world. And their slogan or their logo is Green for Life. Everything you do, when you plant something 10 years, 40 years later, it's still going to be growing. And becoming involved in starting a garden and doing different designs or florists or whatever it is, everything makes you green for life. So it's two very distinct organizations, but with one goal in mind.
So it strikes me as you're very similar in some ways to the Rural Winter Fair. You're in the ag sector, but a different kind of ag sector. You're not in food production, you're in kind of plant production, I guess, right?
Yeah, and the horticultural side of the agricultural industry creates, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs and economic impact across Canada. Canada and across Ontario. And it's important to have both the food side and the horticultural side raise our profile. And that's where we're similar to the Royal Winter Fair. We're celebrating our excellence.
So let's talk a little bit about how you've shifted over the years since the very beginnings of Canada Blooms. Like, how has the demographic shifted? How has your brand shifted? And how has what you're trying to deliver to the public who comes to Canada Blooms shifted over the years?
We've got to have different audiences, and the same way the demographics of society and the city are changing, Canada Blooms reflects that. So more, you read more and more about millennials and people wanting to grow their own vegetables and how do they do that in small space. The cost of housing is so high, and there's more and more people in the condos and townhouses, but they still want to grow their own gardens. They want to have take part in community gardens. You see those popping up all over Toronto, community gardens. And we reflect that at Canada Blooms. We still have large 4,000 square foot traditional gardens, but we also have gardens as small as 100 feet. And last year, for the last 2 years, we've built balcony gardens where we've recreated balconies and do a lot of our seminars. And, you know, specific questions, for instance, people ask, if I'm north facing, what plants can I have different on my balcony than if I'm south facing or if I'm up higher? Winds, you know, my wind load. So really specific questions, almost describe it as micro gardening.
And you're also dealing with a really shifting age group, as well as folks that are in condos or in small apartments and stuff. You're also dealing with a population that is aging, and you've got younger people coming in. So how are you dealing with that?
One of the great examples of how we deal with our different clientele, different customers, different people that attend the show, is with our floral design area. The Garden Club of Toronto has been, for all 24 years of Canada Blooms, building a flower show of traditional floral design, and they have over 800 entries throughout the 10 days of the show, and it's traditional floral design, horticulture, what you'd see at a traditional flower show. But we also have been working more and more with professional florists lately and doing more funky designs and creative and things from the roof and non-traditional designs. So our older demographic loves the flower show itself. They've been coming for years, and they come every year and look for the competitors. But younger people like to see what professional florists are doing and really funky design, different plant material, and different ways of showcasing things that 20-year-old or 25-year-old would be more interested in. So we cover the whole spectrum in how we do our floral artistry.
And how has the sort of ethnic demographic of Toronto changed the show? I mean, I know you've always had an emphasis on a lot of Japanese flower design, for example, but how are other cultures informing what you're demonstrating and showing and teaching?
Well, I think there's so many unique demographics in Toronto and the GTA. And you know, when we have 40 different builders on our show floor showing different types of design and gardening, each one has different clientele and works in different areas of the GTA. And people that are in Woodbridge are different from the people in Vaughan or different from the people in Markham, and our different builders have their different clusters of what they build for and what's different in their design, as well as in our garden marketplace. We have over 120 different vendors in the marketplace, and you'll see different vendors have different type of products depending on the customers are. And it goes from what people put in for artwork in their gardens or in their backyards to the type of bulbs they're planting. Some people love, you know, forsythian smell, others love lilies, and you know, the amount of different plants that are sold kind of reflect all the different cultures.
So let's talk a little bit about the ecology, because I know when I talked to Mark and Ben Cullen, who are a big part of Canada Blooms, they are really interested in ecological gardening. And I'm recording this from Hamilton, and we just had a bit of a disaster with Coots Paradise here and the impact that the community has and runoff has in a wetland, a very delicate wetland area like Coots Paradise. So what are you guys doing in terms of thinking through gardening that is tied to indigenous species, native plants, creating pools and watering that can actually help the ecosystem and help the watershed?
We think about that all the time and the impact, or and positive, both positive and negative impact that gardening and horticulture can have have, a lot more positive than negative. So this year, our theme is, we change our theme every year, and we have a little committee that looks at it. And this year, with Mark's input and some other people, our theme is birds of a feather. And how that ties into the ecology is basically through the whole ecosystem. If you have a healthy garden, a healthy environment, you'll have bugs, you'll have worms. And those bugs and worms will make the soil better and attract different types of birds. And if you have birds in a garden, it means your entire ecosystem is working properly. And that's kind of one of our thinkings of creating birds of a feather as a theme this year. Gardeners, you know, do all kinds of different things, but we're all basically, you know, birds of a different feather that love gardening, love horticulture. And if we do it right, we're really supporting the ecosystem. And we do that, and we work with Mark. We have seminars. We have over 600 seminars that happen during Canada Blooms, where we talk about all kinds of different impacts of gardenings from trees. We work with the master gardeners. We try to, you know, educate people on both natives and invasives. A lot of people don't know the difference between a native plant and an invasive species. And we try to educate and share as much information as possible. And it's amazing, you know, you start having a 5-minute conversation with a gardener, and before you know it, it's two hours later.
So what's happening in terms of the technology that's taking place in gardening? You know, there's a big push in people's homes for having smart homes, smart devices, things like Amazon Echoes and smart wall plugs and stuff. What's happening outside in gardening in terms of things like irrigation, robotics, Roombas that are outside mowing the lawn, that kind of stuff?
Well, we certainly, you know, you see the self-timed lawnmowers where you can set a certain area and it'll cut your grass on its own. But as much as we're seeing people going to modern technology, we're also seeing people going back to traditional non-powered push blades lawnmowers because they want to not use gas or electricity. But one of the things that we're seeing a lot of are self-watering planters where you can put your, they're set up to basically wick into the soil where you need to water them once every week or once every 2 weeks. And that way, if you're go away, you don't have to worry about losing your tomatoes. As well as that, you are seeing a real trend in what we refer to as fusion gardening, where you collect the rainwater that comes onto your property through swells and different cisterns, and that water rewaters your plants for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I think that's a real trend we're seeing along with succulents and plants that use less water that are more drought resistant. You see more and more of that coming into as people learn more about water usage and water wastage.
And what are you seeing in terms of heritage varieties of vegetables in particular? You know, that I know that there's a growing interest in farmers markets. Obviously, that's been the case for years and years now. But are you seeing that people are still interested in sort of the mainstay, you know, Burpee Big Boys and Lemon Boys and those kinds of plants? Or are they're going back to earlier ones like, you know, Brandywines and Federleys and tomatoes and stuff? What's your sense of what people are looking for?
In the garden business, there's so many different demographics that some people are going back to heritage and heirloom seeds, and you see that in our marketplace. We have 4 or 5 different seed vendors that have really specialized in heirloom seeds, but other ones are looking at, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's heirloom or not, what's water, what's drought tolerant, what's water resistant, what's easier to grow, if it's small space, what can grow in shade, as well as community gardens. You know, people have small plots of land in community gardens and trying to be efficient with their space. So we're seeing lots of different areas. Certainly builders are specializing in native plants, and where possible, everybody should try to use natives, but there's some places where it's just not the right plant for the right location. And I think that's kind of the key that we talk to a lot of people about, is right plant, right location, and it can mean different things for different people.
Is generally your sense that there is more gardening going on in an area like Toronto, in Ontario? Have you sort of reached a stasis? Is it going down? What's your sense of that?
My sense is that garden business is really expanding. And where I look at it, you know, we're partners with the National Home Show in terms of, you come to Canada Blooms, you go to the Home Show, you go to the Home Show, you come to Canada Blooms. And probably 95% of the people that buy a Home Show ticket will also come and see Canada Blooms. And the size of our garden marketplace in 4 years has grown from about 50 exhibitors to, we have over 120 exhibitors in here, people that are just selling specifically plant materials, bulbs, gnomes, garden tools, garden sheds, and that's reflective of where the industry is. And from our builder side, you almost need to book a builder 2 years in advance because they're all full. The new trend is, you know, your backyard, what kitchens used to be 10 years ago when you're trying to raise the property value of your house, now it's backyards and outdoor space living. That really, for people in Toronto, is increasing the value of their property, and we're seeing more and more people doing that.
And what are you doing in terms of, we talked a little bit about demographics and a sort of an aging and shifting demographic. I want to talk a little bit about the other end of that, which is sort of the kid demographic and the family demographic. So what are you going to be offering in terms of stuff that kids and families can come in and participate in?
Oh, we're so excited about that this year. We try to make sure we're on March break every year, and working with Mark and Ben Cullen and Mark's Choice. So we have the Mark's Choice Children's Workshop, where any time of the day kids can come and get their hands in the dirt and plant their own beans or peas to bring something home. The Garden Club of Toronto does daily workshops with kids and activities to learn about, you know, how to do different flower arranging and different crafts. And this year we're really excited for a natural playground we have building. We're working with Bienenstock Natural Playgrounds, and we're having the biggest garden ever built at Canada Blooms. It's over 6,500 square feet, and it's a huge natural playground where kids can run up and down rope ladders and swings and tree houses. And really, it's designed to have unstructured play. Go in there, do whatever you want. You look at one log, and 20 kids will play with it 20 different ways. So I think that we're really excited about our natural playground for 2020.
So what do you think somebody who was with the Garden Club of Canada or with the builders back 24 years ago, if they came to the show today, and I'm sure some of them will in a few weeks, what do you think they would see as the major changes from the very first Canada Bloom show?
I think, you know, we definitely have the original Kathy and Tony still come every year, and I meet with them and get their ideas to make sure we're following in their legacy and how they envisioned it. But I think one of the biggest things they'd notice is how much younger and more diverse our crowd is. It's not a formal event like an unveiling or a black tie affair. Now it's, you know, it's people wanting to come and just experience, and, you know, like the city of Toronto's and the GTA in Ontario has evolved in 25 years. Our public, our guests reflect that as well, and a lot more kids involved, and more trees. It's come turned from a little formal event to really it's an educational experience and a celebration of gardening. So I think I definitely hear from them that it's evolved exactly what they hoped, that it was a gift to the city of Toronto, and more people from the city and the region are coming out and experiencing it. And we've gone from, you know, first few years of a 20,000 person show to now we're experiencing about 150,000 people over the 10 days.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Now, before you did this, you were at Ontario Place, and then after that, you were at the Royal Botanical Gardens, another great place for plants and particularly flowers. What did you bring from those experiences to Canada Blooms, and what did you learn at Canada Blooms about agriculture you didn't learn about at the Royal Botanical Gardens before you got there?
Well, certainly it's given me a different background in having a background in events and a background in gardening. Royal Botanical Gardens is a phenomenal garden, formal garden, Ontario Place. At that point, when I was doing Chinese lanterns and fireworks, it was a great event venue. And I think we've been able to marry those two things up, where Canada Blooms is becoming more and more of a festival and event activity, but it's based around horticulture. And you can grow the best gardens in the world, but if not a lot of people see it, it's, you know, you're not really serving your purpose of educating the public and letting people smell plants and get involved. So it's really good. And, you know, what I've learned at Canada Blooms is how many people want to support it. You know, we have over 800 volunteers at Canada Blooms. We have a staff of three and 800 volunteers that make Canada Blooms work. And how many people believe in horticulture and getting, you know, especially young people involved as making plants part of their life. And I knew people loved it, but I didn't realize how passionate, how many people would volunteer their time to make that happen.
Tell me just in closing a little bit about what you've got planned for next year, the 25th anniversary.
Well, that's exactly it. In 2021 is the 25th anniversary, and we're going to be celebrating a lot of our origins. So we're going back to the same theme that we opened the show with, which was a secret garden. And we're reaching out to some of the original vendors and really want to make, you know, every show is a great show, but we want to make the 25th anniversary even a little more special and make sure we celebrate with our partners, the Garden Club of Toronto and Landscape Ontario. And I think you'll see even more influence from those two organizations in 2021.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for talking to us today, and I hope that Canada Blooms is a real success for you when it opens in a few weeks. And what are the dates again for it?
It's March 13th to 22nd at Exhibition Place. And all the information, all the seminars, all the schedules, it's all at canadablooms.com. And you can actually save some money if you buy your ticket in advance online. So it's good for everybody. And I hope to see all our fellow Harrowsmith readers and listeners at the show. Stop by the Harrowsmith stage and say hi to us.
Thank you very much, Terry. That was Terry Cadeau getting set, no doubt, to play in the largest indoor garden in Canada. Buying something as natural as honey should be an easy consumer choice, but these days honey labeling makes that choice more complex. Does Canada's favorite mean it's Canadian honey? Does Canada number one? And what does graded in Canada mean? To help sort it all out, I spoke with
Guy Chartier, Chief Executive Officer with Bee Made Honey.
Here's that conversation.
Guy, thanks very much for joining us. I wanted to talk about something that seems like it should be pretty simple, but it turns out to be kind of complicated. So if I want to go into a grocery store and buy some honey, I should be able to go up on a shelf and pick out the honey. But when I pick up a jar of honey and look at the label, it starts getting confusing. There's Canada grade A number one, grade A number one white. It's a product of Canada. Is that really honey coming from Canada? Can we sort of go through all that and sort of decode that so people actually understand what the label is saying about the honey?
Sure. I think for the most part, what consumers should really look for is a product of Canada. And that really tells you where the product comes from. By law, anybody that packs honey in Canada has to declare where the honey comes from. So if you see product of Argentina or Canada or so on, then it basically tells you where the honey's from. So that's really key is what to look for. I think what's been confusing the consumer is that the honey grade in Canada will always say Canada number one white or Canada number one, let's say golden or amber. And that really is about the color of the honey, and it talks about that the honey's grade in Canada, but it doesn't specifically mean that the honey is Canadian honey. So this is where there's some confusion when it comes with the consumers. And so what we're seeing now is there's product coming to the to Canada, and some of them will say Canada number one on the front, and that is what's deceiving the consumer. Now, supposedly with the Safe Food for Canadian Act coming into play, those regulations are supposed to change, and we certainly hope that will happen. And basically, as we're seeing it now, it looks like what will happen is if your product is truly a Canadian honey from Canada, you'll be able to grade it as or mark it as Canada number one grade. But if it's from another country, you'll only be able to use the grade and the color. You won't be able to use the word Canada. And we think that's going to go a long way in helping the consumer to decipher between honey that is truly Canadian and honey from other countries.
So what's so great about Canadian honey? Like, why does it matter that the honey is from Canada as opposed to Argentina or China or Vietnam or wherever else?
Well, there's a few good reasons why consumers do want to look for a product of Canada. Number one is, like any other product, we know that if it is truly a product that's here from Canada, we know that it's typically a safer product because of the standards that we have here in Canada. Versus product that may come from other countries such as China, for example. You know, they don't always have the best of a reputation. So, and more specifically in honey, the issue is that some of the honey that can come out of some Asian countries and so on may possibly be a blend of honey that's blended with a syrup. So really it's not 100% pure honey. When a consumer buys Canadian honey, they're assured that honey will be a pure product because of the high regulations we have here in Canada. And I think that the second important reason is that, obviously, here as Canadians, we do want to support our growers, our producers in Canada. So, you know, we're doing the right thing when we look for Product Canada in order to support our Canadian beekeepers here in Canada. It's important because, obviously, in supporting them, not only does it support the production of honey, but also supports pollination here in Canada that the beekeepers obviously do with their bees all summer long, all across the country here.
So what are the regulations like in the U.S.? Because that's another place that honey can come from. Are they on par with Canada in terms of quality assurance?
Yes, absolutely. The U.S. would be on par. The big difference in the United States, though, is that the United States produce a lot less honey than they consume. So they're an importing honey country, so they import a lot of honey from other countries. In Canada here, we produce more than we consume. Therefore, we are an exporting honey country, so we export a lot of our honey. So I'd say that the big difference here is, number one, is that you don't see a lot of American honey, if you will, coming to Canada. And the reason for that is because they just don't have the excess supply to export into other countries. But for overall, I mean, if you were to see product of USA coming to Canada, I'm sure it would be a very legitimate, good product to consume.
Okay, so but the main takeaway is you should be looking for Product of Canada on the label, and maybe even looking on the back of the jar in the small print to see if there's any indication of it coming from other countries as well. Is that sort of the main guideline you're offering?
That's right. That's right. If it does come from another country legally, any packer has to declare that the honey comes from what country the honey actually comes from. So absolutely, and it's always, not always, as you said, not always located on the front of the label, but it's important to read the whole label, read the back, look for Product of Canada. And if it truly says and exclusively says Product of Canada, then you know you're sure that you're getting honey that is truly Canadian and you're supporting the beekeeping industry in Canada. So that's not just a bad thing.
Great. Okay, well, thank you for making that as clear as Canadian honey for us.
That was Guy Chartier of Bee Made Honey. So, here we are at the end of this episode of Harris Smith Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to this podcast on Apple iTunes or in your favorite podcast player. And please, tell your friends and family. Got feedback? We'd love to hear it. You can email us at letters@harrismithmag.com. That URL, harrismithmag.com, is also where you can order subscriptions online. And you can find Harris Smith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. Until next time, for Harris Smith Radio, I'm Wayne McPhail. And also, until next time, remember these four words: make, grow, sustain, share. Tune in for the next episode of Harris Smith Radio.